Vice President Kamala Harris and her newly announced running mate hit the ground running at a packed campaign rally in Philadelphia.
Welcome the next Vice President of the United States, Tim Walz.
Pakistani man with ties to Iran is charged in a plot to carry out political assassinations in the U.S.
The plan, according to prosecutors, had three parts: steal documents or computer files from the target's home, plan protests, and then kill the targets on U.S. soil.
And the first African-American woman to pilot a spaceship is visiting South Africa. Today is Wednesday, August 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning. I'm Lori London.
Oh, it is good to be back in Pennsylvania.
The final phase of the race for the White House kicked into high gear Tuesday night as Kamala Harris introduced her Democratic vice presidential running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, at a raucous rally in Philadelphia.
To those who know him best, Tim is more than a governor. To his wife, Gwen, he is a husband. To his kids, Hope and Gus, he is a dad. To his fellow veterans, he is Sergeant Major Walz.
Taking the microphone after Harris, Walz revved up the crowd for the rigorous campaign to come.
So we got 91 days. My God, that's easy. We'll sleep when we're dead.
VOA senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Pursuti was at the rally and joins us now to describe the scene.
Every single seat was taken, and this is an enormous arena on the campus of Temple University. It almost seemed like a mini convention. You know, I just got back from the Republican National Convention, and I felt like it was on a smaller scale. But the energy level was just as high, and every seat was taken, like at the Republican National Convention. They had enormous jumbotrons with Harris Walz on it, on a blue background. A lot of people had on red, white, and blue colored light on their wrists. So whenever they would chant or cheer or clap or hold signs, you could see the red, white, and blue in the crowd all the way up to the rafters. The loudest cheers were when Vice President Kamala Harris came out along with her new running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. She had trouble starting to speak because the cheers were so loud, and you could tell they were pretty overcome by the response. The other times that the crowd responded the most was when she would refer to reproductive rights. She talked about the freedoms that will be decided in this election, reproductive rights being one, healthcare, Affordable Care Act being another. When Tim Walz spoke, he spoke about how wonderful Kamala Harris was, and then he gave a little bit about his background. Turns out that he was a social studies teacher and then followed by a football coach. And it sounds like he inserted a lot of his ethics into both. And then he went into politics and then eventually the governor of Minnesota.
There was a lot of chanting and potentially a new slogan coming out.
Absolutely. It seemed like they were chanting this more than once during the evening, even prior to Vice President Harris and Governor Walz coming out. And the chant was, "We're not going back." That being, these supporters say, "We're not going back to the Trump era. We're not rolling back our freedoms with the same rules and policies that they instituted during their administration." Governor Walz, in referring to...
Did you get a chance to speak to anybody in the crowd? Reaction?
Yes, they are energized. They are so into this new ticket. Now, a lot of them didn't really know Tim Walz that well, you know, and so they said, "I'm anxious to learn more about him." You know, one person said to me, "The voters that Donald Trump stole away from Joe Biden from 2016 to 2020, that's a core demographic that the Harris campaign will have to win." And I think Tim Walz really speaks to those voters. So that's one of the men that I talked to.
Earlier in the day in Philadelphia as well, Donald Trump's running mate held a rally of his own, and you also attended that. Can you give
Absolutely.
Us a quick summary on that?
It was a smaller venue, but very different. I mean, they couldn't be more opposite in how they approached their supporters. There was a very small line outside when we arrived. We walked in and it was a stage, you know, a place that would perform plays, that kind of an area. And lots of supporters in chairs, not in stadium seating like at the Harris event. But J.D. Vance decided to hold it as more or less getting to know him, right? Because it's his first time at a rally on his own. And then he opened it up to questions from the media, which is very unusual. And I even expressed to my photographer, I said, I don't think I've ever been at an event quite like this that wasn't a primary. I mean, this is definitely leading up to the general presidential election, right? So it's very unusual that the chosen vice presidential nominee for the ticket would actually open himself up to so many questions from the media that was there. And honestly, it seemed as if he was pointing at various reporters. He actually called on me and I asked him a couple foreign policy questions about Ukraine and about Israel. And then I actually got a follow-up after that.
So, Carolyn, there was a lot of chanting and potentially a new slogan coming out.
Absolutely. It seemed like they were chanting this more than once during the evening, even prior to Vice President Harris and Governor Walz coming out. And the chant was, we're not going back. That being, these supporters say, we're not going back to the Trump era. We're not rolling back our freedoms with the same rules and policies that they instituted during their administration. Governor Walz, in referring to Senator Vance, you know, he's been very assertive against him and he's called him names, and it just is kind of different. You don't normally hear this terminology in politics, but he said tonight, this guy is creepy and as weird as hell. And he said he can't wait to debate the guy. So we'll see if they're going to debate. Of course, there's a lot of controversy going on between Harris and Trump. Harris sticking to the original date with ABC. Trump saying he's not going to show up because he has a lawsuit against ABC and he is accusing them of bias and he would rather schedule it earlier in September with Fox.
Until now, the newly minted Democratic vice presidential candidate was not a well-known name in U.S. politics. For insights into the man Harris chose to be her running mate, I spoke with Jack Rice, Minnesota attorney and former Central Intelligence Agency officer who worked with the state National Guard that Walz was a member of for years. What's he like? You've met him. He's your governor. What are people there saying? And what can you tell us about him that people might not know that only someone that lives in the state might know?
I've met with him. I've spoken with him multiple times for various reasons. And he is this Midwestern, truly folksy kind of guy. I mean, I've seen him in flannel, in a flannel shirt, and I've seen him in a blue pinstripe suit. And he seems comfortable in both. And he's extraordinarily relatable. He is very, and dare I use this term, plain spoken. When you talk to him, he doesn't talk over your head. He looks you in the eyes and he talks to you. And that is really quite strange for politicians when you feel like you're getting sound bites driven at you. He doesn't really do the sound bite thing, although he does it quite well, which says maybe he's extraordinary at it, or maybe he just doesn't like playing the game, or he plays it great. I just don't know which.
How do people in the state overall feel about him? He seems very popular and well-liked.
Yeah, you know, he is actually very popular. He's very well-liked. He's also extraordinarily experienced. You got to look at where he comes from. He spent 20 years as a teacher, so I'm sort of a card-carrying member of a union. But he's also retired from the Minnesota National Guard. He's a former command sergeant major. That's an E9, as high as you can get in the military. That matters, and that matters not just in Minnesota, but elsewhere. 12 years as a member of Congress in a right-leaning district, and he comes in as a Democrat. We have that. We have a two-term governor. Having all of this federal experience, having state experience, having this sort of background really brings a lot of, I think, power to the Democratic ticket, especially if what we're talking about here is somebody who has the potential to influence not just Minnesota, but Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio. I mean, when you start thinking about somebody who can do this, he has a skill set that I think Harris doesn't have. And I think when you're looking for a running mate, you're always asking yourself the question, what do you bring to the table? He brings a lot.
What in particular, are there any things in particular that you feel stand out as far as the things he's done within your state?
I do. When we think about what he's done for reproductive health care and access, he's come out very strongly on that issue. He's the one who was driving paid leave. He was talking about paid family and medical leave, sick leave, transgender rights protections. These are all things that are really important sort of across the ticket. And so some of these might be attractive to the left of the party, when in some ways there are those in the Democratic Party who may not have seen as much of that from Vice President Harris. So he's bringing a lot of things, but there's one other interesting twist. The guy's also a hunter. Believe it or not, he actually had the support of the NRA one term.
NRA, so just say he's a gun owner.
Yeah, he is a gun owner, and he was getting support from the National Rifle Association, which sometimes is seen as a right-wing organization, not because he's right-wing, but because he believes in certain concepts of the Second Amendment. But he's also been driving gun safety. And so this combination is something that Harris doesn't have, and something that's oddly unique. And so that's another piece of what he can bring to the table for the Democratic Party for this election cycle. That makes him different.
Minnesota-based attorney Jack Rice, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. An Iranian plot to kill former U.S. President Donald Trump appears to have centered on a Pakistani man with ties to Tehran, who hoped to also target other high-profile politicians and officials. VOA national security correspondent Jeff Selden has more.
Charging documents unsealed Tuesday say 46-year-old Asif Merchant spent 2 weeks in Iran before flying to the United States in April, looking for help to target multiple government officials and politicians. The plan, according to prosecutors, had three parts: steal documents or computer files from the target's home, plan protests, and then kill the targets on U.S. soil. The White House declined to comment on specifics of the case, but said countering the danger posed by Iran has been a top priority.
We have said many times that we have been tracking Iranian threats against former politicians. We've been very clear about that.
Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says many of the threats have been linked to Iran's desire to get revenge for a 2020 U.S. airstrike in Baghdad that killed Qasem Soleimani, a key Iranian military commander.
We have invested extraordinary resources in developing additional information about these threats, disrupting individuals involved in these threats, enhancing protective arrangements and potential targets of these threats, engaging with foreign partners, and directly warning Iran.
When contacted by VOA, the suspect's court-appointed lawyer declined comment. But court documents say Merchant told an informant he can make up to $100,000 and that he paid two undercover officers posing as hitmen a $5,000 advance. And while the papers never identify which U.S. officials were on Merchant's hit list, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee said in a statement that this case was the one that prompted the U.S. Secret Service to enhance security for former President Donald Trump. U.S. officials arrested Merchant July 12th, a day before an unrelated assassination attempt targeting Trump during a campaign rally in western Pennsylvania. Even with Merchant in custody, however, some analysts are bracing for more.
Much like Iranian projectiles, sometimes quantity has a quality of its own.
The Foundation for Defense of Democracies, Benim Ben Talablu, points to previous Iranian plots targeting former U.S. National Security Advisor Ambassador John Bolton, Iranian dissidents, and others.
On the one hand, some of these things may sound cartoonish or too far-fetched, but on the other hand, there's a persistence behind it, which is worrisome.
Top U.S. officials agree, the FBI director telling lawmakers just last month, quote, "I expect there will be more coming." Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
We're following these other stories from around the world. The United States has evacuated two people from an airbase in Iraq for additional medical care following a rocket attack Monday that injured seven. A U.S. defense official said Tuesday five service members and two contractors were wounded after two rockets slammed into the Al-Asad base in western Iraq. The British government has increased its prison capacity to help tackle violent, week-long anti-immigrant riots that have prompted a growing number of countries to warn their citizens about the dangers of traveling to Britain. And the World Health Organization is warning that governments throughout the world are unprepared to combat the global surge of COVID-19, which is putting millions of people again at risk of severe disease and death. Nobel laureate Mohamed Yunus will head Bangladesh's interim government after longtime Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina fled the country amid a mass uprising that left hundreds of people dead and pushed the South Asian nation to the brink of chaos. Farwa Amer, Asia Society Director of South Asia Initiatives, spoke to VOA on the latest developments.
A period of political instability was lingering even before elections that happened in January. The elections themselves didn't help the unrest, and public dissatisfaction just grew. And there's so much controversy around it not being free and fair. When these circumstances emerged in the past few weeks and intensified, they kind of just further added to the fragility of the governance that we've been seeing and witnessing in Bangladesh over the past few months. And it was sort of like the final nail in the coffin, so to speak, you know, making it harder and harder for Sheikh Hasina to retain control and power. At this time, it felt like it was almost unattainable. So against that backdrop, the news of her resignation and eventually leaving Bangladesh, this was not all too surprising. Rapid, indeed, but not shocking.
The decision to choose Yunus was announced early Wednesday and came during a meeting that included military chiefs, organizers of the student protests that helped drive Hasina from power, prominent business leaders, and civil society members. Hamas has named its Gaza leader, Yahya Sinwar, as successor to former political chief Ismail Haniyeh, who was assassinated in Tehran last week. Sinwar, the reported mastermind of the October 7th attack on Israel, has been hiding in Gaza, defying Israeli attempts to kill him since the start of the war. Iran has vowed revenge for Haniyeh's killing. U.S. national security leaders are calling for calm and say they are directly pressing Israel, Iran, and others to avoid escalating the conflict. Secretary of State Antony Blinken warning it could upend delicate ceasefire negotiations that are reaching a final stage.
It's urgent that everyone in the region take stock of the situation, understand the risk of miscalculation, and make decisions that will calm tensions, not exacerbate them. That's particularly true given the decisive moment that we're at in the ceasefire negotiations in Gaza.
The calls come even as the U.S. moves more troops to the region and is threatening retaliation if American forces are attacked. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. The first African-American woman to pilot a spaceship is visiting South Africa. Sian Proctor, renowned astronaut, geology professor, artist, and author, is visiting South African institutions to promote a STEM workforce. There is a shortage of expertise in STEM to meet the demands for jobs in space. Zahir Kasim reports from Johannesburg.
Sian Proctor always dreamed of being an astronaut. In 2009, she became a finalist for the US space agency NASA astronaut program, but didn't get the job. Proctor, a geology professor and artist, never gave up on her space dreams. In 2021, she was chosen to participate in SpaceX's Inspiration 4, the first all-civilian orbital mission. She became the first Black woman to pilot a spacecraft.
Going to space and on a SpaceX Dragon capsule and being the mission pilot is the most rewarding and inspiring thing I could ever think of. To be able to say that I'm a Dragon flyer, and for, you know, girls and women of color to see me and know that if I did it, they can do it too.
Late last month, she was in Johannesburg, South Africa, speaking to over 250 high school students about the importance of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, or STEM, when pursuing a profession in space exploration. She says another subject is also crucial for would-be astronauts.
My art in space project. Art.
But we gotta add the arts in because that's the creative side. You can't have science without creativity and imagination because that's where the innovation comes. And so it's really important that we inspire, prepare, and eventually employ students to go into these areas.
The space sector is expanding rapidly, yet companies face challenges in recruiting due to the high demand for STEM skills. Space agencies in the United States, United Kingdom, and South Africa have all reported a shortage of qualified personnel. Exposure to real-life role models can help address this issue, says Steve Sherman, head of the education nonprofit Living Maths, which helped arrange Proctor's visit.
We want them to know how exciting a career can be if they interact with these people who actually use math and science and technology in their careers. If they can see how awesome it is, then hopefully they'll be more engaged.
Many in the country don't know space careers exist, says South African National Space Agency educator Ntabiseng Lebaka.
I had no idea that South Africa has a space agency. They were looking for a science educator. So I'm currently working as a science engagement officer, where we do outreach programs, we do space labs, we also do teacher development training as well.
Proctor then took a mission to Cape Town, where she shares her inspirational journey to promote education in STEM subjects and the arts.
Space to inspire!
Sayed Kasim, VOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
Every Wednesday, a running club in New York City is bringing together hundreds of people who are not only looking to stay fit, but also searching for love. A 3-mile run is followed by beers at local bars, during which the club's members try to find romantic partners or make new friends. June Su reports.
Go-to method of meeting romantic partners for years, but people in New York City seem to be abandoning the apps in exchange for a new dating scene, run clubs. Annie Jorgensen is a member of Lunge Run Club.
So I decided in late spring that I was just going to cleanse from the dating apps. I wasn't finding any success on it. And I've had a lot of fun and been meeting people in fun and unique ways like this club.
According to global ticketing platform Eventbrite, athletic dating events saw a 135% increase in attendance from 2022 to 2023 nationwide. One of the most popular gatherings for athletic people looking for love is Lunge Run Club, which meets Wednesday evenings at Washington Square Park in Manhattan. It even has a dress code to help its matchmaking mission. Rachel Lansing is a co-founder of Lunge Run Club.
So everybody owns black in New York. It's kind of like the New York uniform. So we made it all black if you're single. And then we wanted to just be open to everyone. So even people who are just looking to make friends, we wanted them to still be able to come, enjoy the run club. So we just said, wear colors if you're taken.
Many of the run club attendees attributed their participation to dating app fatigue, an experience studied by dating experts. Boston University assistant professor Catherine Caduto studies how people use media to connect with one another.
I think there's some disenchantment with dating apps overall, of feeling like they're an option, but maybe not the best option. Whereas speed dating or something similar, you know, an in-person meeting, a group maybe where there's similar interests, allows people to connect in person and have that initial conversation without the phone as an intermediary.
Steve Cole founded Lunge, a fitness-oriented dating app that inspired the Lunge Run Club. The club has grown from 30 participants for its first run earlier this year to over 1,200 people signing up for this latest meetup.
It's actually the largest singles event ever recorded in New York City, and we actually break that record every week as we continue to grow.
Boston University's Caduto says meeting over common interests is an effective strategy.
I think there's longevity in connecting over shared interests, whether that's running, whether that's going to see live music, whether that's meeting up at a brewery.
According to Eventbrite, in-person dating activities in the United States saw a 42% increase in attendance from 2022 to 2023. June Shu, VOA News, New York.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Lori London.